Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Rescued by Ava Quinn, narrated by Isabel Turner and Jay Alder. Chapter 1. Margot. I lean up against the sink in the small airplane bathroom, a whiff of medical-grade soap in the air as a perfect stranger presses up against me. Well, perfect is an overstatement. He's a stranger. A stranger, with long dark hair, thick black glasses, and a story about the revolution on the tip of his tongue. I know because I can taste it. He's not unattractive. I'm sure someone would find him handsome in a nerdy historian kind of way. But none of that matters right now. Right now is about finally taking control of my life. He sucks in a deep breath and lets it out slowly, his lips against my skin as though he's downloading my scent to memory. Is this what sex is? Is this supposed to turn me on? Maybe I'm a lesbian. That would really get my mother going. I close my eyes and lean into the moment, desperate to finally lose this weight I've been carrying around for so long. Mile High Club and Cherry Popping Club, all in one swoop. Some might call me a superstar. The man heaves a heavy kiss into the crook of my neck as we finagle ourselves in the small space. At least he smells good, like fresh baked bread and mint. Maybe something sweeter, like the whiskey he's just finished. It's funny what bravery a few bottles of airplane liquor will give you. Well, that and the three margaritas I had leaving the airport. This vacation has been one disappointment after another. First, Lexi runs off with her boyfriend. Then Sarah gets sent on a different plane going who knows where. I'm not saying they had to stay attached to my hip, but it would have been nice if they did. I mean, all I wanted was for us to have a nice getaway before my parents stick a knife in my life and presume me done. The thought of it twists my stomach, and I lean into the stranger's lips harder, trying to drown out my reality. I know my friends all think I'm this experienced woman of sexual endeavors, but the truth is, I've been trying to lose my virginity this whole trip. If my parents want to give away my life, I guess that's a price I have to pay, but I refuse to let them give away my virginity, too. That's mine. And it goes on my terms, which apparently is at 35,000 feet with a strange man who clearly doesn't know what he's doing. His hand grazes down over my breast as he kisses my neck, leaving behind a trail of heavy saliva as though he's a snail. I push it away and reach down to grip his balls. I have to make this work. It's the last chance I'm going to get before I'm home and everything I do is monitored.
To the left. He mumbles, moving my hand to the correct position between his legs.
When I arrive, it's not much better than it was to the right. Maybe I'm jaded, though. I've never been with a man. Maybe dicks aren't as big as they are in porn. I mean, those guys are in porn for a reason, right?
I snap open the button on his slacks and slide my hand into the darkness, gripping onto the stranger's hard cock. I've had too much alcohol, but I'm not drunk. Instead, it's that weird space where you know exactly what you're doing, but you've lost all care for reasoning. The man groans and hitches my dress up, stretching his fingers into the creamy slit just beneath my panties.
"Do you like that?"
he grunts as I stroke his cock. We're like teenagers tucked under the bleachers at a high school football game. We're doing nothing right, but we just keep on doing it anyway. I let out a sigh like I've seen women make in movies, hoping that somehow heightens the experience, but it only encourages him to keep touching me in the awkward place he's touching. God, this was a mistake. The plane jolts, and we slide sideways a few inches and against the thin wall separating us from the rest of the plane. What am I doing? Why am I letting some strange man touch me on an airplane? Maybe the liquor is starting to wear off. Is this what my wedding night will be like? Strange touching, awkward kisses, being with someone who doesn't know at all what you like. It doesn't sound fun to me. In fact, this is borderline awful. The man swirls his fingers deeper inside of me, his thumb pressed somewhere near my clit with little regard for pressure or speed. At this point, I suppose I should fake an orgasm. That's what women do to finish things politely, right? Moan a few times and pull up his pants. He groans again as I stroke. Oh, fuck, don't stop. His eyes squeeze shut, and his body stiffens against me, his hand unmoving between my legs as he focuses on whatever it is he's feeling. His forearm tenses against my stomach, and his muscles flex, then release all at once like firecrackers exploding. His fingers pull from my core, and he slides them into his mouth, sucking my sticky juices off his fingertips, with his head leaned back like he's enjoying the fruits of his labor. I'm tempted to tell him I haven't come, but I don't have the heart. Fuck, the slender man groans. Sorry, that was fast. You're so hot, I just kept... It's okay, I lie, resituating my skirt before turning to wash my hands. He kisses the back of my neck with a heavy groan that sends a shiver up my spine. And not the good kind. The kind that makes you want to elbow someone and run. It's a long flight. Give me an hour. I'll come inside you next time. I nod and smile, pushing past him toward the silver door that's just a reach away. I should be embarrassed. Everyone watched me walk in here with a guy. They know what we've been doing. But as I leave the small space, I don't pay the onlookers any mind. I just make my way back to my seat and tuck into the window like nothing has happened. Though, at this point, I'm wishing I'd thought out the timing of our escapade. Now I have to sit next to him the rest of the flight, and I'm pretty sure we still have quite a ride to San Francisco. How did I even end up here? I threw myself at nearly every man on that island. Maybe I'm hideous and I don't realize it. Maybe this whole arranged marriage is the way to go. At least I won't be lonely forever. I bury my head in my hands as the man returns to his seat, his gaze heavy. I don't even have to look up to feel it. You okay? I'm good, really. I'm embarrassed, he says. I usually don't come that fast. It's fine. I turn back toward the window, embarrassed for him as much as I am for myself. I hope he doesn't talk about it the rest of the flight back. I might have to say something if he tries. I should have thought this through. So, what's your name? He asks, setting his tray down as he pulls a snack from his bag. I glare toward him and swallow hard. It makes sense we didn't exchange names. Margot, I say, barely making eye contact with him before switching my gaze back toward the window and into the clouds. He mutters out his name in return, but I don't catch it as a woman's screeching scream interrupts. Help! She shrills. My husband's not breathing. I twist back to see a young flight attendant rushing down the aisle toward a man that's clutching his chest. The couple are in their late 50s, I guess, maybe a little older. Please, please help him, the woman hollers, tears rolling down her face as she clutches a cross that's strung around her neck. Is there a doctor on board? The attendant yells. No one answers but the man next to me, the one I was just stuffed in the tiny airplane bathroom with. I'm a nurse. You'd think if he were a nurse, he'd know the human body a little better than he did a second ago. Maybe I should encourage him to stay in his seat. He's at risk of killing a man, not missing a clitoris. He stands and makes his way back to the older gentleman, who's now laid out in the aisle unconscious. The man from earlier bends into him and begins CPR, pumping his chest and breathing for him without hesitance. Okay, maybe he has a purpose. Back up, the attendant says to people gathering. We need to give him space. The small crowd returns to their seats as the pilot comes over the loudspeaker.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be making an emergency landing in Salt Lake City. You will be required to make connecting flights from there. I apologize for the inconvenience, but the safety of our passengers is our number one priority.
A gross, unified groan overtakes the plane as passengers show their disapproval. What's wrong with people? A man is laid out struggling and his wife is sobbing. Is there no kindness left in the world? I mean, a man is dying and the lady in 12B is worried about her luggage being lost. Perspective, lady. Perspective. I turn back toward the commotion, watching as the flight attendant and bathroom man work to get the older man stable. I can't much see what they're doing, but they seem to be giving him some kind of pill. Maybe he's had heart attacks before. My grandma had one, and they gave her nitroglycerin to carry around with her in case another started happening. She could pop the pill, and it would help slow things down until she got to the hospital. The man tries to sit up, his hand still over his chest.
What's going on?
He's looking toward his wife. Lay back down. You're having a heart attack, dear. He doesn't answer. He just looks at her with wide eyes and leans back.
Bathroom man looks toward the wife. I think he's stable now, but you'll need to get him to the hospital as soon as you arrive.
The woman nods, and I feel the tip of the plane begin its descent. Finally. I know this isn't the end of my journey, but it will be more than a relief to ditch this guy and get on with my life. Unless, of course, his final destination is San Francisco, too, which would be a terrible turn of events. I should have asked first. There are so many things I should have asked first. I suck in a deep breath and let it out slowly as the bathroom man returns to his seat. I should say something. Something encouraging. He did just save a man's life. Good job with that, I manage. They really needed your help. He shakes his head.
His wife says he has small heart attacks all the time. I'm sure he'll be fine once they get him to the emergency room. Looks like we're going to have quite the holdup, though. Where are you headed?
I suck in a deep breath and let it out slowly, praying that he isn't going to the same place.
San Francisco. You don't sound so happy about it.
That noticeable, huh? He nods.
What's going on? Does it have anything to do with you wanting to fuck a stranger in the airplane bathroom?
Please. You were flirting with me before we even boarded the plane. You wanted it. He grins.
There is never a time I don't want it. I'm a man. You, though, you're obviously desperate for dick. You
desperate for dick? I repeat the words as though they're ludicrous, but they probably aren't far from the truth. I'm desperate to know you're not heading to San Francisco. I know that much.
Well, you're in luck, then, he says. I'm on my way back to Oregon. I spent a week in the sun, and now it's back to reality.
I wonder if I should ask him how many STDs my hand just got. But I figure he came so fast that it's probably been a while since he's been touched as well. Besides, he's not going to San Francisco, so I'm happy to move on with my life.
So, why don't you want to go back to San Francisco, Margot?
He pushes his glasses up onto his nose and stares forward as the plane descends. I know I don't owe him anything, but the conversation is distracting as the plane tips down. I've always hated this part of flying. Just a lot of family stuff going on, I say.
Like what?
I snap my gaze toward him. Nosy much?
I'm making conversation, he says, defensive-like. We're never going to see each other again. I'm just talking.
He sighs.
Jeez, it was easier to fuck you.
I laugh. Fuck me? You barely got up my skirt before you came in my hand. I hardly count that as fucking. He smiles as the wheels hit the pavement, bouncing us slightly as inertia pushes us forward. Silence ensues as the plane pulls into dock and a team of emergency workers rushes to help the man who's had a heart attack. They load him onto a gurney, place an oxygen mask over his face, and pull him off the plane quickly. I hope he's okay. His wife still looks sick with worry. Once he's off the plane, the rest of the plane files out, packing together like sardines who've been trapped too long, everyone impatient and unwilling to wait their turn as they push in front of one another.
Good luck to you, Margot, bathroom man says. I'll never forget you.
I nod and smile sarcastically, squinting my eyes. I'm sure he won't forget me. I was probably the first woman he'd ever touched. God, what the hell is wrong with me? Maybe I should stay in Salt Lake, start a new life here. Let the mountains be my new home. I'm sure there's some rustic cabin off-grid I can find. When the aisles clear a space for me, I file out of the plane and onto the runway, at a loss for what to do. I should make my way to the counter and rebook my flight, but the line is already winding around the terminal and my stomach is growling. Maybe I'll get a bite to eat first. That, and I should call my mom and let her know I'm going to be late getting home or she'll start worrying. Lifting my cell from my bag, I dial her number. She picks up immediately.
What's wrong? You're not supposed to land for another 4 hours.
We had to make an emergency stop. A guy got sick. She sighs, and I imagine her gripping her chest dramatically.
Thank God! I thought something awful happened. So what are you going to do? Where are you? Should I call the airport and get you another flight?
I'm in Salt Lake City, I say with a sigh. I'm not sure why I'm annoyed by her already. She's barely said anything. I suppose it's residual. Maybe the fact that she's pushing me into marrying a man I don't know. I've got it. I'm just going to wait for the line to die down a little. She sighs, and I already know what's coming next.
I don't know why you had to go on this trip anyway. Leaving a week before your wedding is terrible luck. Plus, you're missing out on all the planning.
I narrow my eyes and shift the phone away from my lips for a second, so I can order a cup of coffee and a muffin.
Carbs? My mother groans. Margot, maybe you didn't hear me. I said it's a week before your wedding. Have you been binging all week? You're not going to fit into your dress.
Carbs have been the least of my worries this week. In fact, I've gone nuts enjoying every carb I could get my hands on. Bread, fruit, alcohol. I ate whatever I wanted. It's a huge change from what I'd have gotten at home.
I'll be home soon, Mom.
Honey, she says, her voice dropping.
You know I just want the best for you.
What if I don't want to marry Rishi then? What makes you think he's what's best for me?
We've talked about this, Margot.
He's perfect for you. Dad and I picked him specifically with you in mind. You two have so much in common. The fact that she calls Barun my dad is the first thing that pisses me off. Sure, he's been around since I was 8, but the man was not my father. He was barely home. The hospital always came first.
You mean you thought that Rishi's family would make good business partners?
I haven't said this to my mother yet, but the distance gives me a false sense of confidence. Either that or I'm still tipsy from the alcohol I was slurping earlier.
Don't start, my mother scorns. You don't know what it took to get this arranged for you. You're about to have everything you ever wanted. Money, a big house, a life of leisure to do whatever you please with. Do you know how hard I had to work to get that for us?
Work? Is that what they call what you do? It has to be the distance. I'm not sure even alcohol would give me this confidence.
Margot Marie, you know damn well how much I've sacrificed for us. I don't understand why you insist on making your mother, your flesh and blood, feel so inadequate when you know how much I've done for you.
I realize my mom thinks she has the plight of all plights, growing up poor and dating men until she found a rich one that would have her. But I don't much see it as the same struggle she does. The line is easing up, I lie. I'm going to see if I can get my ticket. She sighs.
If you need a faster flight, don't be afraid to spend more money. We just want you home.
Got it, I say, hanging up the phone. I'm sure they do want me home. They have more propaganda to shove down my throat.
I scan the area for a quiet spot, finding one near the far corner of a nearby terminal. Maybe I can enjoy my muffin in peace. Closing my eyes, I sink my teeth into the spongy treat, a blueberry popping in my teeth as I bite down. There's something about an airport muffin that's different. Maybe it's the sugar crystals on top or the heavy density. I don't know, but it's delicious. I lift the coffee cup to my lips and take a long, warm sip, letting the liquid slide down my throat slowly as I fantasize about where I could go. Maybe I could go back to the Caribbean. I can sell drinks on some beach, live free like I was meant to be living, and see what other trouble I can find. Then again, that's the first place my mother would come hunting for me. Not that I owe her anything. Technically, I'm old enough to do as I please, but I think she'd find a way to ruin my life in order to get what she wants. I look toward the line. It's long. Maybe longer than it was 5 minutes ago. I could stay in Salt Lake for a few days, get my head together before I go back. Or maybe it was fate. Maybe I'm supposed to end up here. Maybe I really am supposed to go off-grid and start a new life. My heart starts to race as I think about all the choices that were taken from me. Which college I attend, where I live, whether I'll work, who my husband will be. Hell, I'm sure Rishi's family has even written into the contract how many children I'll bear.
Kids. Why is this the first time I'm thinking about kids? How would I raise a child with someone I barely know? How can I even trust that he'll be present?
A bright yellow rental car sign lights up in the distance. I'm sure it's been there the entire time, but the way it looks now, it's as though it's beckoning me toward it, calling me in like a secret siren only I can hear. My gaze flashes toward the ATM. I could take money, rent a car, take off, go wherever I please. No one would know where I was or if I was ever coming back. Waves of nausea spill over me and spots flutter through my vision. I could really do it. I could leave right now, take over my life, find my own little spot to settle. The thought is scary and exhilarating all at once. For 24 years, I've lived under my mother's thumb. I'm not sure I can even fully imagine what it would be like to be fully free. I imagine myself driving down the road, the window down, the mountains in the distance. The radio on whichever station I want because it's just me. I'm not thinking about my parents or this stupid wedding or carbs. I'm only thinking about myself. I suck in a deep breath and let it out slowly, standing from the bench, my feet moving one in front of the other before my brain catches up with the movement. I slide my card into the ATM and take out $1,000. I want more, but it's the maximum daily allotment. Time has slowed, and each step is heavy as I keep moving my body forward through motions my brain hasn't fully computed. It's as if another part of me has taken over, an internal cog that's gone rogue and is now making decisions. This time, toward the rental car counter. The guy behind the counter is asking me questions, but I'm not sure I'm even answering them.
Where are you heading?
The man hands me a pair of keys and slides my credit card back across the table. I've used the credit card. I suppose that's not a big deal, though. Mom already knows I'm in Salt Lake. I'll be long gone before she's realized I've rented a car.
Where am I heading?
I repeat. That's a good question. Where am I heading? My brain freezes and I let out a sigh, trying to get a hold of some sense of consciousness.
Canada, I say, nearly blank.
Okay, well, you have the vehicle for 1 week, so you'll have to return it to a shop at the border. We don't rent internationally.
I nod blankly, my toes tingling. My body is no longer a part of my skin. I'm holding on to something I never have before. The reality of a future I've never thought was possible.
We only have pickup trucks left, the man says. It might come in useful on those roads anyway.
Are the roads bad?
No, but they get snow late in the year up north of here, so you never know when you'll need the four-wheel drive.
I nod, as though that makes sense, and I can totally handle it, even though I'm not sure I can. Even though my heart is pounding, even though I can barely catch my breath, even though I'm leaving everything I've ever known for a brand new life with only $1,000 in my pocket. $1,000. My shoes cost $1,000. Not sure how I'm going to make this happen, but I know without a shadow of a doubt that my body is craving a change. And for the first time in my life, I'm done denying it. Chapter 2. Margot. When I wake up, I'm in a small motel surrounded by paintings of elk grazing in an open field, mountains in the backdrop. The walls are pine logs, and the comforter covering me has bears climbing on picnic tables. Where am I? I remember leaving the airport in a daze. I remember renting a car. I remember driving until dark. I even remember renting a motel room and falling asleep. I don't remember what gave me the nerve to do it all. I must have snapped, lost my mind, gone crazy. Something. When I take a pause, the ramifications of my actions start flooding in. My mother is going to kill me. Like, absolutely murder me when she realizes I didn't take an immediate flight home. I reach for my phone. I should call her, make up a story about how I was kidnapped, but managed to escape, and now I'm on my way home. But the second I reach for my purse, I remember tossing the phone in the trash outside the rental company before I drove off. Shit. My mother has probably called the police by now, though I'm not sure what they do when you report your grown daughter missing. If I'm gone too long, I wouldn't put it past her to hire a private investigator. They have the money. I suck in a deep breath and stand from the small bed, making my way to the bathroom to rinse my face and get dressed. All I have is this sundress, which I feel like a whore in after yesterday's airplane incident. I need something new as soon as possible. Then I'll make my way back home and tell my mother once and for all I'm over her shit. She has to listen to me. I'm an adult. At least that's what I'll tell myself as I make my way to find some food. My stomach is growling. I haven't eaten since that muffin at the airport yesterday. And acid is making its way up into my throat, biting at my tongue. There must be a breakfast hall around here somewhere. Sure, this place is a lot smaller than the rooms I usually stay in, but all motels have breakfast, right? Outside, the sun is bright and shining, despite the biting temperatures. I'm not used to the cold weather again yet.
Ms. Margot? A voice calls.
I turn back to see the short, gray woman from last night, the one who checked me in at the front desk. It was late when I arrived, and I thought it was odd that she was wearing a robe. She must live on the premises.
How was your rest? You looked exhausted when you pulled in last night.
I walk toward her, hoping she'll have some news on breakfast. This morning, she's wearing a blue dress that hits just below her knee, and her hair is tied up in a loose ponytail. She's wearing a name tag that says Katrina. She must own the place. I guess, given the sign says Katrina's place. I'm a real genius, you know.
I slept like a rock, I say truthfully. Woke up starving, though. Is there a good place to...
Breakfast?
a man says, hopping down out of a pickup truck.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?